I've done meditations for our employees, and that has been not about increasing productivity. It has been about creativity. It is about helping people to make smarter, better decisions, be better humans.
I'm Isha Da Vinci. This is the Grift Podcast, conversations with founders, technologists, scientists, journalists, creatives, psychologists, well-being experts, and authors, with a goal to get you ready for the future. So far, we've talked a lot about technology. In this episode, we're going to talk about creativity. Why? As we enter this future of massive exponential change, tapping into our creativity will become vital in our careers and in our lives. Today's guest is musician, marketer, mystic, and author Will Cady. He's also global brand ambassador for newly IPO'd social media platform Reddit. Will and I discuss creativity, what it is, simple steps to tap into your creative self, creating with AI, and we even do a little meditation exercise. This is a super cool episode. You're going to leave feeling refreshed, hopeful, a lot more creative, and ready for the future. So let's dive in. Will, thanks for joining me today.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. So let's share a little bit about you before we dive in. Will Cady's purpose is to repair broken systems through strategies and storytelling informed by a view unconstrained by the present paradigm. Prior to taking on his role as Reddit's global brand ambassador, Will launched, hired, and managed Reddit's Los Angeles Brand Partnerships Office and the Karma Lab Creative Strategy Team, tapping years of experience architecting revenue-driven programs that connect brands with fast-growing pockets of music, art, and experience just as they reach their tipping points. Will's brand strategy work covers a majority of Fortune 100 brands. He's a graduate of Berklee College of Music, recipient of an Emmy Award for Best Musical Composition Arrangement, and has been featured as a member of the 2020 Adweek Top 50 for Tech, Media, and Marketing. His original music has amassed 2 million plus streams on Spotify and counting. Will is also a meditation teacher and tarot card reader. His debut book, Which Way is North? A Creative Compass for Makers, Marketers, and Mystics, was released in October of 2023 and comes out in audio form on April 9th of 2024. In all areas, Will endeavors to listen deeply, speak thoughtfully, and to measure success through the lens of healing. So, you play many roles. You're a creative, a marketer, a mystic. Tell us a little bit about becoming this very sort of unique and interesting person.
To me, all of those roles are being human. And I see myself in this place right now at the convergence of a lot of different changes that we're all going through, trying my best to be as human as I possibly can, bringing all of the skills, all of the education, all of the experiences I've had to bear to really long form that idea. So to me, being a creative, being a meditation teacher, being a tarot card reader, they're all the same thing, just trying to be human.
I love it. These days, everybody's in their boxes and they have multiple boxes and they get this sense of self from some identity that's outside of themselves. And it's so weird. For me, it's like so crazy because the truth is
I get very squirmy in boxes. As soon as I'm given a title, I want to escape it.
Same. Exactly. Because it's just like all of a sudden you have limitations and like what? No. I'm not, don't tell me what I'm not. Because the moment you put a box on someone, you're telling them that they're not something. It's so weird. I mean, this is, and it's a real problem because we're in this whole identity crisis era when your identity is from yourself, from inside of you, your being, not multiple things that are going on outside. So anyways, but you've been living this, right? Because you have these different titles and roles and different things you do. And so you must have people coming at you in different ways. How have you maintained this ability to just be you in the midst of it? And what can we all learn from that?
Context is key. I've really started to play with the perceptions that people have of me, depending on whatever context I'm in. And even if I'm using what I think are the same skills, if I feel like I'm a consistent version of myself, I've realized that I'm a character in other people's stories and they're casting me according to whatever role they need me to play. So when I'm a tarot reader in the back of a crystal shop, the only thing that matters about me is that I am
a tarot reader in the back of the crystal shop.
Yes, exactly. And it's really nice to not have to be anything else but that.
At that moment.
Exactly. Mm. And I learn more about people. I learn more about myself. I learn more about conversation and connection. And again, I think the main theme here of being human by checking as much as I can at the door, taking the coat of whatever identity I've been working in and hanging it on the coat rack and then sitting down and just being a pair of eyes and a mouth that talks and ears that listen.
Yeah, just being present.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you become this sort of person? Like what was the journey growing up, and where did you grow up?
So I grew up near Walden Pond, in a town called Acton, Massachusetts, and it's really like the cradle of the American Revolution. I was very close to the Old North Bridge where that all began, and every Patriots Day they do the march and they recreate the battle. And in that area, you know, this was like a birthplace of great writers and thinkers like Ralph Waldo Emerson, Henry David Thoreau, Louisa May Alcott, and yeah. I draw from that for inspiration as I endeavor to be a writer in this world now. Cause I'm like, you know, for me, it's empowering to think that maybe there was something in the water that I was growing up in. But my household was very countercultural. My parents were what we call deadheads, huge, you know, kind of Grateful Dead hippies. And also really engaged in local politics, like very much a part of the community. And I used to watch my dad on the TV for our local TV network on town halls, like in his tie-dye as this like character. Everybody knew this sort of like colorful weirdo that kind of was like a pillar of the community in his own way. And that set a really important model for me about community and about counterpoint. Right? That's kind of the core idea of the counterculture that they represented. And there's a thread there to Emerson, to Thoreau, to Louisa May Alcott of a little bit of intellectual curiosity and defiance of whatever is kind of taken for granted. So that's where it began. And I take pride in that part of my story from where I came from.
You know, we're at a time when sameness, when the internet has done many wonderful things, but also flattened our thinking, created a sameness across the world. And people who are inclined to just follow and go along get caught up in the waves of ideas, of thoughts, of trends, of hashtags, of whatever nonsense is pervading that particular day. How does one not get seduced or sucked into that kind of way of being? Because it's so compelling right now, and it's happening all the time, everywhere, all the time. How do you stay counterculture? How do you stay out of it? How do you stay true to yourself? How do you stay true to something that's bigger or greater or beyond that? Because clearly,
it sure is.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it sure is challenging. There's a story that comes to mind for me. Mm. I was in a brainstorm with these really, you know, creative, they're absolutely incredible artists. And it was related to the Meow Wolf, Omega Mart in Las Vegas. And so, you know, if anybody, one answer to the question is go to a place like that and you'll see something that's really, you know, just kind of eye-opening and enjoyable and funny. But in this brainstorm, part of it was like creating these subversive versions of these different products. And I think I must have like misheard somebody or what, but like we were joking about the idea of renaming I Can't Believe It's Not Butter to Who Told You That Was Butter. And that to me was so freaking brilliant in terms of capturing what we're going through in this time, because who told you that? Where did you get that idea?
Yeah.
Is a really important question and something that I like to challenge and provoke people on all the time and in subsequent brainstorms is, or just conversations is, where did you get that idea? Is that idea even yours? Does that belong to you, or is that something that was put into you? Who told you that was butter? So that's a little key, like a little almost kind of, you know,
I love
catchphrase.
I love
it. In my mind, whenever I'm contending with an opinion that I think is my own, and then I just ask, who told me that was butter? Who told me that?
Good strategy, a good approach, a good tactic or tool to unfuck your brain in a sense, because we're exposed to all of this digital shit. Excuse me, I don't normally use this expletives on this podcast, so you're bringing it out of me. Well, I might edit that
Excellent.
Out. I don't know. We're inundated. Our brains are flooded with this content, this information, amplified by algorithms, with influencers who are riding the wave and who are trying to use the algorithm to boost their profile. So they will say any garbage, anything to gain visibility. And so we have these horrible waves of horrible things, like the Kate Middleton thing recently. I think what you're saying is, if every day we had a practice where we said, where did I hear that from? Who told you that? So you're like, wait a minute. Where did I get that thought from? How did that enter my brain? What is this? And we unclog or clarify, because we're overloaded with stuff and we don't even know where it comes from.
What you bring up is very important. I think in the Kate Middleton story and a few other things, there is a moment of humbling that people online are having right now. And I think that there's a couple of other areas where we're seeing that media speculation and celebrity speculation and just social media user speculation gets things wrong all the time. And so we've been in this wave of pseudo expertise on a lot of different things where people are propagating information that they haven't even really fully absorbed yet. And I was actually at dinner with a friend last night, and they were talking about this new sort of rung of the political dialogue online, where you have still the armchair activist that is basically like putting forward, you know, their take on whatever the conversation of the day is, regardless of their expertise or merit in it. But then now we have people that are not actually sharing a perspective of their own, but they're just reposting what they find.
Yes.
And that moves the information faster without verification.
100%. And again, I'm going to say the influencers who, that's what they're feeding off of. That's what they're using to build their presence. So somebody has some political party or some group or some whatever, they have an agenda, they put out some terrible information that's provokes, that outrages, that they know is going to get picked up by the algorithm. And then the influencers ride on that and they drive it home. They personalize it, they humanize it, and then they drive it home. And then we have millions and hundreds of millions of people participating in false narratives across the board. It's terrible. I remember... So we both live in LA, right? You're in LA, yeah?
Yes.
I remember back in the 90s when the press was hounding Britney Spears, and I was at this Beverly Glen Plaza on Mulholland, which is a place I frequent. And Britney happened to be there, and the all of the paparazzi were just hounding her, and she was trapped and they with their cameras, and it was like people attacking people trying to kill someone. And it was the most vicious and brutal thing I'd ever seen. I could not believe I was watching humanity. And this is that same, I think, phenomenon at a mass level now online. So that's, let's hound XYZ person. It's
my feelings about it are turning. And I do think that there is a dawning realization of the need for empathy amongst all of us in the crowd when we're spectators on other people's lives or other people's stories. Mm. And this is a little bit of my, call it media practice, where I like to notice when certain narratives are emerging in different places. And I've noticed this as a theme in the Beckham documentary, in the Britney Spears story recently, in this Kate Middleton story, in, you know, a few other places where a key villain in those stories is exactly what we're talking about, is people thinking that they know what is going on with somebody and then really just kind of creating a traumatic even experience for these individuals. I don't think that that has been as prominent of a feature in storytelling in the past as it is right now. So I think something is turning. I think that there is a rising awareness of this, and I am hopeful about where that is going to lead for the evolution of our cultural discourse.
Because if you really think about it, it's like the mob mentality. It's like, okay, let's go attack this person. Let's kill this person. Let's take down this person. And without any basis or any reason whatsoever, other than some wave of hysteria digitally manufactured. So Will, what excites you? When you get up in the morning, what are you thinking about that is moving you forward into your day, into your life, into whatever you're creating or what you're thinking about? What is that thing for you?
It's connected to what we were just talking about, because I'll relay another story of a conversation I had with somebody. There was a friend of mine that had sort of mentioned that they laughed and they said it. They were like, I think I'm getting dumber. And they started describing all of these moments where they kind of felt like they couldn't retrieve information or a memory or a word or something like that. And as they were talking about it, I really related to that experience, and it's something that I felt at multiple times in my life. And my provocation back to them is, I don't think you're getting dumber. I think you're becoming smarter, and you're noticing some of the limitations that you used to have. And that is something that I think is happening in our culture, is we aren't getting any worse, even though it sure feels that way. I think we're becoming more vividly aware. Yeah. And I mean, it hasn't been that long since the internet connected everybody with all available human knowledge.
Right.
That's a lot to get through.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that we're in an adolescence of that, where we have found that we have this strength and we're learning how to use it. That is very exciting.
Yeah,
to me.
I like that take on it. Very, very well said. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
We're evolving. We're growing. We're learning. We're becoming more. And that's always gritty and messy and human, right? It is whatever it is.
Yeah, the mess is part of the human.
Mess is part of the human. I think we like to say this is what it is, as if everything is static or things are just going to be what they are. But it's growing and expanding and becoming more. Mm-hmm. So I like that take. Right. So you wrote this book, Which Way Is North? A Creative Compass for Makers, Marketers, and Mystics. So pretty much every single person. Why? Why'd you write this book?
Because I had to. That's, you know, kind of carrying around a bunch of experiences and ideas and really wanted to get them out of my head and onto paper so that I can stop carrying them around as much. And that is entirely what happened. That's really kind of quite nice to externalize a part of your brain like that. Wanted to be a writer. You know, as I kind of mentioned earlier, grew up in a community that really celebrated radical thought and great writing. And that certainly, you know, planted its seeds in me very early. And I genuinely love people, and I have a lot of heart for humanity, and I believe in us, and I want to help. And this was the best that I could come up with the skills that I have to help. That's not saying that it will, but that's what I'm trying.
It's a lovely book, and I like how it's laid out, and you could just drop in at any point and pick up any chapter anywhere at any point, and you're fine. You don't have to read it from front to back or anything. And so it's very unique and powerful. And I think everybody can learn from it and use it in some way in their life. Okay, so creativity and tapping into your creativity is a key to preparing for the future that's starting, which is this rapidly moving world with forces in it that we've never encountered before. Being able to access and utilize your creativity is crucial as we traverse this age of machines and artificial intelligence and all of that stuff. So you're a master of this. I want you to teach us, starting at the very beginning, what is creativity?
To create is to be human, and to be human is to create. That's a deep belief that I have. And what that really stands for is participation in creation. I'm very interested in this word creation itself, because creation can mean an act, it can mean an object, or it can mean the whole of nature and reality. Depending on who you're speaking with, depending on what culture you're speaking in, depending on your context, to participate in creation is to participate in all three of those things. I think that the most, mystical is the idea of creation as all of reality. The most mundane is the idea of creation as an object. The act of creation is the kind of in between that makes, the mystical mundane and the mundane mystical. And so I wouldn't call myself a master of creativity. I would call myself devoted to creativity, because it means that at every moment I am wondering how I am doing in each of those three lanes of participating in creation. And as far as, this conversation goes, our earlier discussion about having original thoughts, that is a huge part of it, because when I am having an original thought, if I'm finding an original thought, something that comes from my heart rather than from my feeds or from, my mind, maybe even something that just really comes from the uniqueness of my own experience, I feel it. I've gotten very familiar with the texture of it and the energy of it that kind of excites me. And I say my heart because my heart beats in a particular way when something like that happens. That is when I know I'm participating in creation. So my mission is to help other people gain at least a level of fluency that I've found in the language of creative experience, like I've just described.
That's so beautiful. You're making me think so many thoughts while you were saying that. Because, okay, so we're in this internet world. This is what it is. And one of the challenges with the internet, I think, for creative people, for artists, for writers, musicians, it was the fact that the internet's this massive copy machine. So it copies everything. And it seems like you can't control what your creation. And everybody else owns it, and they can do whatever they want with it. I remember the phenomenon around about 2010, Facebook times, when there were these people who would take someone else's content and then post it online and then get followers and likes and whatever. And I watched it happen. I couldn't believe, I thought it was just a very vulgar thing that you would do that. I'm like, who are these people and why are they doing this? This is not their work. Without any attribution, they're like, oh my God, look at this. I found this great quote. Here it is. And it was fine for them. And it became the norm. It's become the norm that you would just share whatever content you came across. So the internet's this massive copy machine. And now we have, of course, we have large language models. And then we're taking that to a whole other level. From what you're saying, it sounds like this is going to push us as humans to be more human, more connected to that act of creation and that tapping into original thought. Because now everybody feels I was a copy artist and they're all made their name copying other people's stuff. And I've always been like, I gave zero credit for you if you're copying somebody else's stuff. I'm like, well, whatever. When last have you had an original thought? And I think you're talking about that, how to have an original thought, how to tap into that zone of allowing something original to emerge. And that is what it's about.
It is. Yeah. When there's a human in the loop, then there's the opportunity for creativity to happen.
Yes.
I do think.
Yes. This is so
What's coming
good.
Up for you?
Well, no, because we're in this era of machines and everybody's like, people are so fucking obsessed with these the AI. Oh my God. And I'm like, no, fuck AI. I'm like, yeah, master the model, master the AI, master the machine. You're a human for crying out loud. You're not here to be a slave to the AI or their owners. And so, and you are giving us the ways to do it. So this is so delicious. Okay. I'm probably going to edit that bit out because this is wild.
It's great. It's passionate.
You're making my brain go off in like 100 different ways at the same time.
You know, a part of that is, the human element, an important part of it is getting something wrong. So, for example, what I brought up earlier about this idea of who told you that was butter. When you walk into a Mega Mart, the Meow Wolf exhibition in Las Vegas, and you go to the display, the questions that they're playing with are like, what is the true essence of butter? Or it's all these different ones. I got it wrong. That is not what is actually on the shelves there. And in that mistake, I found something really interesting. And it was like coming from, I don't know, maybe my unconscious, maybe there was like sort of something there. And then similarly, in particular, as a songwriter, the majority of my songs were written trying to learn how to play somebody else's that I couldn't. And in that limitation, rather than reach that destination, I kind of took an exit ramp and ended up at something unique and special to me. And so getting it wrong, making mistakes, being messy,
yes.
That's the human in the loop.
Yes.
Because it
yes.
reveals something about the experience that we're having.
I love it. It's like human in opposition to machine. These are the characteristics of machine. What are the characteristics of humans in relation to this? And how does it emerge? Again, these are definitely things we're going to have to be grappling with as we move into the next few years, and people are going to have to become really, really cognizant of what is that difference and how can I be more true to the essence of consciousness.
It's experience versus explanation. It's heart versus mind. That's human versus machine. So it's the human domain to have an experience.
I love it.
But we have kind of been conditioned over the last few decades in particular to prioritize explanation over experience.
100%.
Mm-hmm.
100%. And time for shift.
Mm-hmm.
This thing here that you're talking about is what the conversation has to become. Otherwise, humanity's lost off the deep end of I don't know what.
I think we'll be okay. I referenced, like a very modern art experience, Meow Wolf, but I spent a lot of time going to museums. I was at the Norton Simon Museum yesterday. I was at MoMA in New York earlier this week. I go to LACMA. I go to I go to museums as much as I can, because when you look at the work of art of somebody that was an exceptionally gifted creative human, you're experiencing their experience. You can feel it. And so there's something that has been with us for a very long time, and there's something that will endure. And it's actually in the overlap of your experience on top of their experience. We're not going to lose that.
I don't think we're going to lose it at all. And I certainly think what's incredible about humans is if AI sets the bar here, we'll top it. We'll just say, oh, that's the bar. We'll top it. So whatever these large language models do, to everybody's saying, oh, it's going to be so great. And then artificial general intelligence, and we're going to do this. And I'm like, yeah, fuck you and your machine. We'll top it. We're going to top and your machine.
I have an idea here that I don't think I can sufficiently back up, but I still want to say it.
Yeah. I like that.
I believe that technology is scaffolding for human potential.
Yes. No more than scaffolding. Thank you. Perfectly said.
We externalize before we internalize.
I love it. I love it. Love it. Love it. Yes. Say that again. So technology is scaffolding. Is merely scaffolding? Did you say merely scaffolding?
I wouldn't say merely. I don't like the word merely, and I don't like the word just. I prefer to be in wonder.
Okay.
technology is scaffolding for human potential. That's coming to the surface for me because, so in my book, there's the seven directions.
These are like steps to tap into creativity, right?
They're literally the seven directions around you. What is in front of you? What is behind you? Above, below, to your left, to your right. And then the seventh is in your heart. And each of those have a very particular meaning with a set of questions to ask to really examine your inner experience. And so the book helps people to close your eyes and experience what it is to be in your inner world, because that is the place where creativity comes from. And to gain, I'll use this word again, fluency in your inner language. For some people, it's imagery. Some people, it's memory, song, feelings. Sometimes people even smell. There's an inner world that you go into. And this is something that, because of my mystical upbringing in particular, latched onto my creative education, is very comfortable and very easy for me. I close my eyes, I'm having a great time. I'm in a whole other thing.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it has dawned on me in my life and career and in the process of writing this book that that is not something that all people experience, but that doesn't mean that they don't have it. It just hasn't been cultivated as a skill set. And people don't think that they can be creative. And I ardently disagree with that. So this idea of scaffolding, it's really at the top of my mind right now as I've really looked at a lot of the VR and AR experiences that people are having and seeing, you know, like meditation apps that are being designed for Oculus and Vision Pro and just thinking about, well, what is that going to mean for people? And there's in particular, there was a sense of wonder that people were describing after the Vision Pro came out, that after they took it off, they kind of in a limbic way expected to be able to move windows around in their reality. So it was altering their sense of spatial experience. Mm-hmm. And the person that brought that to my attention brought it up with concern that that's a bad thing. And I understand that. But what it also did for me is it made me realize, I was like, oh, this is going to help people have a spatial internal experience the way that I'm accustomed to and find to be incredibly valuable. Mm-hmm. So it's going to help people close their eyes mm-hmm. and experience something on the inside because it's scaffolding. It's mm-hmm. It's a crutch. It's a ladder to mm-hmm. help people step into something that... How do you describe the color green to somebody that's never seen it, right? So you have to kind of take them there. And so the book is, it came out before this, right? So it's really interesting in terms of how it is, I hope, going to gain a new relevance as a blueprint for literally spatial design. Mm-hmm. Because each of these directions that I talk about in the book are containers for emotional psychic experiences that is a blueprint for, you know, for stories. You know, the idea that what you receive comes from your left and what you give goes to your right, right? And that what's in front of you holds your hopes and fears and what's behind you holds dreams and memories held in shadow and things like that. You know, those are built upon deeper human truths about how we experience life three-dimensionally, four-dimensionally, five-dimensionally. And these technologies are going to help us find our fluency with that. I hope that my book is a handbook in that unfolding.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so much there to discuss that we could go into. That's just another conversation. I think you're introducing ideas that have to sort of register and then you can build on it and then build on it. But it's a whole lane of thought and understanding and being that you're creating for humanity that is so massively needed right now. In the book, you say on page 176, the best ideas, I'm going to read the quote, the best ideas come from noticing the in-between. They're not invented. They are discovered at the places where themes intersect. Let them emerge. Clear the noise from the signal, and you'll hear what's speaking from the in-between. Powerful creativity doesn't come from discovering your idea. It comes from discovering the idea, self-apparent, emergent, ready to be released in the combination of things. That was really good.
So, thank you. I love hearing you read it too. I've been really exploring this idea of stewardship over ownership. And that describes how I feel about ideas, that I don't feel an ownership of them. I feel that the role of the creative is to be a steward of them. And this comes from, in particular, the experiences that I've had in creative brainstorms with artists and marketers and whatnot, when again, like kind of a theme here, when something comes up and somebody says something and, you know, somebody maybe gets it wrong, or there's a disagreement, or, you know, we bring our different biases to the table, but we're all there. We're all having a shared experience. We're all practitioners. We're all devoted to the creative act. Universally, what ends up coming through is something that is in the in-between that wants to be expressed. And it's the humans in the room that are the ones to express it, to the ones that are to kind of recognize it, grab hold of it, give it material form, and bring it out into the world. I don't think AI can do that yet. I don't think that it can recognize and select that unseen. I could be wrong about that, but that is something that, strictly speaking, as a creative professional, anytime I've tried to like put my idea out into the world and like say, like, this is everybody's gonna think I'm so smart and I'm so creative, never works. Anytime I just try to get out of the way after recognizing the idea that wants to express itself through myself and other people, explosive.
I want to get back to the whole AI question, and you talk about creating with machines. We'll talk about that in a second. You teach meditation, among other things. Can you walk us through a little meditation that will sort of help us find that in-between space, maybe, or some?
Yeah.
I don't know. A couple of minutes.
Certainly, I can do a short one. So wherever you are, preferably not driving an automobile or operating any sort of heavy machinery. Get comfortable. I prefer to sit and strengthen my back, you know, just kind of put my hands on my knees and pull my chest forward and push my shoulders back, just kind of bow the spine out and stretch a little bit and then go side to side. Just whatever kind of stretches get you into a comfortable place.
Mm-hmm.
And not just close your eyes and just breathe for a few moments. And as you do, notice how you breathe. Notice where in your body you're actually breathing. Is it in your belly, or your chest, your shoulders, your throat? Like, where do you send that breath? And then notice generally how your body feels, where there's tension, where there's calm, where you might feel some soreness. A lot of that is information. I can presently feel my flight from New York with all that turbulence in my body right now. As an example, there's a story in that tension. You carry it. Just notice it. Now, under the umbrella of this idea of creativity, that's already something. You're already carrying ideas in your body. So if you can deconstruct that into a story after the meditation, you could write or paint or sing, express the story that your body's been holding. Release it. But now let's play with breath a little bit. So every inhale is going to be in through your nose. Every exhale is going to be out through your mouth. So let's take your deepest inhale of the day in 3, 2, 1, breathe in through your nose, expand your belly. So breathe into your belly, relax your diaphragm, expand your sides, your ribs, your chest, your shoulders, all the way to the top and hold. Just feel how good that feels. Feel how your heartbeat is changing as you hold your breath. And now breathe out through your mouth. keep your back straight, pull your belly into your spine. Get a real dignified kind of yogi sort of pose here and hold when you get to the bottom of empty lungs. Feel the discomfort of that. Another breath in through your nose, an even deeper breath, slowly belly, sides, chest, shoulders. The height of your inhale is the height of your gratitude. The more you can appreciate having air, the more you can appreciate anything. And now breathe out through your mouth, pulling your belly into your spine, getting to that place of discomfort and holding. The depth of your exhale is the depth of your courage. The more courageously you can face not having air, the more courageously you can face anything. Breathe in again through your nose, and now see if you can a meter rising from the bottom to the top, representing the full capacity of your lungs. When that meter gets to the top, hold. Notice how your body feels. And breathe out through your mouth. That meter falls from the top to the bottom. And hold. And now come back to breathing on your own. Take a little inhale and breathe in whatever way feels comfortable for you. But notice a couple things. First, notice where you breathe on that meter. Because we generally don't use the full capacity of our lungs. And so that means that your range of breath is probably closer to the top or closer to the bottom. And what does that mean if you breathe, if you draw your breath closer to the height of gratitude or closer to the depth of courage? And consider how you breathe affects how you feel, and how you feel affects how you think, and how you think affects how you act, and how you act affects how you breathe. This meditation is a way to intervene with that story that you've been carrying. Notice what's shifted in your body from the first time you closed your eyes and kind of felt into it. You have the opportunity here to ask yourself, what is that story that is unfolding in your breath? And you also have the opportunity to implant a new story, a new rhythm, a new pattern, a new way of being. You can do it anytime. 3 breaths. That's all it takes. And that's the meditation.
Beautiful. Like, so perfect. For the conversation, for this time in the world, for the intensity of what we're walking through as humans in general. I got this picture of someone on the street, like in New York, where it's, you know, urban life, very intense, a lot of information. Just kind of like when we're on the internet now, we're just like bombarded. And This is a lovely exercise that you could just drop into 3 breaths, any moment, anywhere, anytime, and find this calibration to your inner truth, which is what we really want to, where we really want to be living from and emanating from and experiencing life. So that was exquisite.
Beautifully put. And I love the vivid imagery that you shared of the experience in New York. And I think that that's a part of your internal language. Yeah. And that is building a vocabulary of that for everybody listening. That's how you become more creative. Yeah. Is you notice what your unconscious self is telling you.
Yeah.
Through the language of vivid imagery, like Misha just shared.
Interesting. Very nice. That was really, really nice. So you do this all the time, right? You teach meditation at Reddit.
I do. Yep. I've done meditations for our employees, and that has been not about increasing productivity. It has been about helping people to make better decisions. It's about creativity. And I really want to emphasize that because I think that there is a very poignant conversation about wellness in the workplace happening right now, that mm-hmm. wellness is not about increasing productivity. It is about helping people to make smarter, better decisions, to be better humans.
That distinction is, again, the distinction between human and machine, because machines mm-hmm. are about productivity, speed, precision, getting it done in this particular set way, blah, blah, blah. And humans about creativity, making better decisions, better choices as beings. Mm-hmm. And this very clear distinction, creativity is a human experience, a human ability, and productivity is what machines do.
And the benefits are very literal. They're very, very literal because, you know, we went through, you know, how we carry stories in our body. Mm. We carry stories in our minds, right? Mm. Noticing what's really going on, mm-hmm. noticing what wants to come up and is looking for a human to grab hold of it and express it. Mm. That is where innovation comes from.
Yes.
That is where strategy comes from.
Yes.
So yes. It's a very, very literal benefit.
So let's say we have, you're at Reddit. Congrats on the IPO, by the way. I'm sure all of this helped facilitate that.
Thank you.
So let's say you're in a room with at Reddit or whatever company you're working with, and it's a team and they're, you know, brainstorming and creating something new or trying to do something, solve problems or create new things, right? This is what a company does. You're either solving a problem that exists or you encountered in your efforts to do X, Y, and Z, or you're trying to create something new entirely. And again, there are a lot of different challenges that come up along the way. So teams sitting together and you walk them through this sort of meditative process and allow people to step out of their productive mind into their creative self. And what's really happening is stepping out of the busy mind of the tick, 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 and into that heart of allowing itself, that beingness that's innate to us, that we all forget all the time. But as we step into that as a group, we create the space that allows all this other stuff to emerge that's magical. Is that what happens? Like, you're doing this all the time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That is what happens. Everybody's on a bit of self-help is a little self-centered right now. And so a lot of people we're on an individualized journey. What you just mentioned is so incredibly important, because when you start doing this stuff together, whoa, other things just kind of start happening that are the pure essence of magic. And you know, I've done meditations where the book teaches the seven directions, which is an individualized experience. It's part of, you know, this, you know, moment that we're in as far as self-help and mental health practices and mystical practices go. I recently have been leading versions of this meditation in group settings where we've done it in a circle. And so what ended up happening in a very abstract, imaginative kind of way, using breath to move the energy around that circle and to move it into the center of the circle to co-create something in a shared imaginative space. Not only was that a gorgeous experience in and of itself, but, you know, every time I've done that, it's moved energy in that community in a particular way that yields different kinds of like conversations about relationships and about projects and about ideas. And it's so powerful. I haven't even really cracked this open yet. Mm-hmm. I'm still in the phase of mostly working with teaching people the individualized methods, but in a group setting, we'll come back to it. I'm seeing the first light of something really remarkably special about that.
Do you know what it made me, when you were talking about it, and what it made me think about? It's like a spaceship between the galaxies, somewhere out far, far somewhere in the universe, and the crew on the ship utilizing these kinds of techniques in order to transcend a time barrier. So maybe jumping from one level of time to another level of time, or transcending some, or dealing with some big challenge out there in the unknown. And by doing this kind of, I don't know why this thing popped in my brain, but by doing this kind of technique, they were able to come up with a solution. They would like download a solution that never existed before, but which maybe one person couldn't do it, because if one person did it, they couldn't possibly communicate it to the people who hadn't done the exercise as a collective. But once they did it as a collective and they collectively downloaded the solution, then all of a sudden the whole ship could rise to another level of, I don't know, some, anyway, this idea just popped in my head.
Cool. Is that like a story or something that you came across, or is that something that is coming into your head as like a story?
While you were talking,
it
popped in my brain.
So that's it. That's exactly what we're looking for in the creative process. Is that I'll expand on the ideas that I feel you were pointing to, which is tapping into a frequency, which is literally a rhythm of how your heart beats, how your body breathes, and how your mind thinks. And it's a way to experience time. I very strongly think that. I write about that in the end of the book, that the way that our heart beats modulates our perception of time. And so in that experience of time is a way of experiencing the world. So that's why I go to museums. When I go to a place like Meow Wolf, I'm in this chaotic frequency of these incredibly brilliant, you know, creatives that they have there that are modern artists. When I stand in front of a Van Gogh painting, I'm in training to the frequency of how he felt putting that paint on that canvas. When you're going into a gorgeous architected space, it suggests to you a way of being in it. And these are spaces where everybody's going to have their own unique experience, but it's going to be their own unique expression of it, right? And so you're allowed to be wrong in this, right? Because we're not going to have matching descriptions of the experience of tasting chocolate, right? But chocolate is going to affect us in a common way. And this idea of having a group experience where you all drop into a shared frequency gives you the opportunity to basically wrestle with it and steward the expression of whatever information, whatever idea is ready to come through from that particular frequency. That is something that I think is a vital skill for cultivating team-based creativity that we haven't really even brought into the professional world in any meaningful way yet.
Yeah. The Lakers basketball team, their coach, Phil Jackson, he would make them do meditation before going on the court. And that really would change the level of their game. So yeah, obviously this needs to be happening.
Yeah. Context again, right? And so that's why people go to shows to see bands play in different venues, is they want to see what's going to happen in that place and in that time. So why shouldn't creative teams do the same?
Exactly.
Have a spatial experience of that. The more, you know, the more present you can be in the frequency of the experience you're creating for, the better you can download what ideas want to come through into it.
This is so on page 22 of the book, you talk about creating with machines. I'm going to read a little bit. There are many creatives who feel great anxiety about what artificial intelligence designed to make art will do to their station in life. Yet it is that very anxiety we have that machines could never take. Even the most impressive of what we call generative AI, designed to make art, can only render, not conceive. Ooh, that's good. Machines have no worries. They ask no questions. They have no dreams. They require the energy of human input. Human choice is what powers the machines. Whatever tool you use for your creation, you are still the shaper of the vision. And then on the other page, as you go along in that chapter, you say, partner with the randomness of creativity in machines. It's an opportunity to step outside of yourself for a moment. Okay, let's talk about this whole concept, creating with machines, and how, as humans, you would guide us to navigate this period.
This period that we're in right now, as far as
generative AI, yeah, explosion.
Well, that last bit, I think, is really important in terms of using AI as an assistant to randomize the combinations of things. And so there's an exercise in the book that is, it's a little silly, it's a little simple, but the point is to demonstrate the principles of basically like making a list of different ideas and then seeing how they kind of, what pops out, interconnect. Yep, exactly.
That's what the large language model is doing. It's creating new patterns. It's taking little chunks of information and restructuring how they connect and coming up with new ways of new possibilities based on the body of information it's been fed.
That is largely what is happening under the hood. And it is making inferences based upon the training data, what combinations of words are going to be suitable for the most
based
people that
prompt,
are prompting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the core power of it is the ability to rapid fire find combinations of things that is largely not a human strength. Our human strength is in finding meaning in those combinations. And so what I like to use AI for is surprise me, scramble my thoughts and, you know, scramble the data set and let me see what you've got. And sometimes even some models are able to, they can put forward an idea of what may be, you know, the kind of most striking combination, but it's the randomness, right? And, you know, it's those kind of peanut butter and jelly sandwich moments, right? Where, you know, two things collide into each other and they create something that with a human in the loop, like they're able to basically say, oh, that is interesting. Let's play with that.
The human chooses that. So it's the human in response to this new combination that says, ooh, that's interesting. And without that human saying, ooh, that's interesting, it's nothing.
So I'll be very literal here. The way to do it, basically ask prompt an AI to generate these lists for you. So let's say you are, you know, trying to figure out the creative for a car commercial. So let's use it in the marketing space.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Ask it to generate a list of locations. Ask it to generate a list of music genres.
Mm-hmm.
Ask it to generate a list of movie plots.
Mm.
Ask it to generate a list of color schemes. Anything that would be the key components to a creative project, to this car commercial. Put it in lists.
Mm-hmm.
And then after you have all these lists, ask it to start combining them randomly. Or, depending on the sophistication of it, ask it to see if it thinks that there might be ones that you'd be interested in terms of, you know, unexpected combinations. You know, another unexpected is an adjective. Ask it to make a list of adjectives, right? Unexpected combinations, heartwarming combinations, inspiring combinations, depressing combinations, right? And you're there as the decider. You're there to make the choice. It's there to serve up randomness because strength and the weakness of the human is the anxieties and the stories that we carry, the biases that we ultimately have. So it's a way to basically, I said it before in this conversation, take your coat off and hang it on the rack at the door, be something different, and then figure out what you want to walk out with.
Yeah. Well, okay. It's really good. You talk about officiating a wedding somewhere on your website, a wedding in the metaverse.
Yeah.
What are your insights on extended reality and immersive experiences? And how do you see that sort of playing out for humanity? Where's that going?
That was on a spatial platform where people had avatars that could gather around a basically like a portal of a screen into the space where the wedding was happening with me and basically the bride and groom and a couple of witnesses.
Mm.
It was during COVID. So it was kind of prompted by necessity in that case.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. I think largely speaking, when it comes to these things, it's not about trying to make that digital experience as close to the physical experience, but allowing the digital experience to be its own thing and allowing the physical experience to be its own thing. And it's, you know, there's like layers to the onion, and each layer in the onion has got to have its own creative strategy, its own experience. That's what, you know, kind of learned from that. It's difficult to really draw that connection between, you know, those different domains. But it allowed more people to access the experience because they literally couldn't be there because of, again, COVID. So it extended the opportunity. But in the extension of the opportunity, it's okay if what you want it to be at the core is diluted. And then after recognizing that that's going to be diluted, you can start to play with it and allow it to be its own thing that you don't have access at the core, access to at the core.
Yeah.
That's how I would look at those things right now. And, you know, we're still a ways off. You know, these VR experiences that we have, the spatial web and computing, they're very lonely right now. Mm. And I think we're all very interested in figuring out how to bring co-experience into these places. Mm. But my sense is that, like, don't try to recreate reality. Just make something unique, new, and novel.
Okay. Well, I feel like we're just barely even starting a conversation. So you're going to have to come back. What's one thing that listeners can do to tap into their creativity on a regular basis? Because this is such an important skill set to have as we navigate this period and move into the future.
We did a three-breath meditation. Mm-hmm. Three breaths. It can be 15 seconds, you know, it can be 30 seconds, it could be 90. But training the habit and the muscle of just dropping into the experience of a moment is critically important for human creativity, because it will always be the human experience where the relevant stories come from. So that is the one thing anybody can do, is enhance your ability to do that. Take three breaths, listen to the sounds, close your eyes, put the screen down, open your eyes, feel the air on your skin. Just recognize that this moment is never going to happen again and experience it, because it might be your job to express it.
I love it. So for listeners, you're getting a taste of what you're going to get when you get the book, and it's called Which Way Is North? A Creative Compass for Makers, Marketers, and Mystics by our guest today, Will Cady. Will, this was such a really powerful conversation, because that meditation was so delicious. Maybe I'll just like start doing meditations in the middle of like conversations.
Oh, you know what? One more tip too is go to museums, go to modern museums, you know, and don't worry about being right about the experiences. Get it wrong. Just have your own experience. Yeah. Go be an idiot at a museum.
I love it. I love it. Okay. So what are you doing now? What's next for you?
Literally what I'm doing next is I'm going to a solar eclipse festival with my sister and my niece and my wife. And my niece is 8 years old, and she is such a creative little being. And we live across the country from each other. We haven't had a lot of time together, but I am so thrilled to have been able to create this opportunity for my family, and in particular for her. And this, it's like a festival. There's like DJs and art installations, and I'll be speaking on like the consciousness stage, and there'll be talks and, you know, workshops and food and games and just all of this stuff. And I am just ready to let her lead the way and to just be a resource. Just, okay, like what is the experience you want to have? Yeah. And that's, I'm ready to be less self-centered, and this is going to be an exercise in that. And I'm really looking forward to it, because she is so gifted, and I'm so excited to play that role in her story. I think of it as like Drosselmeyer in the Nutcracker, the uncle with the eye patch that gives her the keys to her journey through the looking glass.
Beautiful. Okay. How can listeners connect with your work? I will put all the information about the book and your socials and website in the description, but what else?
Sure. So the book is available everywhere books are sold. The audiobook comes out April 9th, 2024. So we'll likely be out. And that'll be available everywhere you can listen to audiobooks. Definitely want to encourage people to do both. There are original drawings and designs on the pages. There are guided meditations and original music in the audiobook. So they complement each other very, very nicely. And stay tuned.
Well, this was wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on and really sharing your deep depth of knowledge and wisdom and sort of magic. It's so cool.
Thank you for having me. This is really such a pleasure.
Make sure to listen, follow, and subscribe for new episodes wherever you get your podcasts and on our YouTube channel.